Mr. Buchanan, Reel 2. We were talking about your basic training at the Bridge of Dawn Barracks, Aberdeen. We're looking at weapons training. What about grenades, hand grenades?
We've taught how to get a grenade and how it works, how you pull the pin out and you held it tight and then threw it, and let it go and then wait it for 5 seconds or something and toss. That was when we came to the bit, we went to the range to try this out and you took your life in your hands, you're in a trench and then quite a high trench and you take the pin out, let it go, and then toss it over the head and drop it into the cup and put it down in the so that we could go into the death in the there's many stories told about that, but some of the grenades put the top of the parapet and come back again and the sand is grabbing it quick and throwing it up, but that didn't happen to us. It went well, the way we went it. In fact, most of our grenades were thrown as soon as you took the pin out, you tossed it, you know, but you'd rather than wait 5 seconds, you know.
Any other weapons, either some of the submachine guns, a Sten perhaps, or a Mortars or anything like that? Now, what about your instructors, the NCOs? What were they like? How did you get on with them?
They were regulars. They were all right, but they had a job to do. Looking back, they had a job to do. They were very fierce, very. The one obviously is to smack your visor when you put it against him, you smack it so the blood comes out there. And he was mad, you know, I always felt he was a mad person, so he was a lieutenant. But that was the only thing. We were scared most, some of the sergeant majors were really tough. There was, you know, if you looked at my own way in my charge, and that meant, fortunately, I didn't get it charged with it. You had to watch how you walk, and you had to watch how you walk about the country, you didn't have to scourge you. It's not major that the rest of the world is the regulars were more stiff than the co-op because that was their job, and if they didn't do it, they were going to lose.
Now, how long was your training going on for?
I think it was only 6 months training.
So you were there till around about September? Do you know when you went to Catterick? So you went to
Catterick?
About July?
Yeah.
Joe, just one thing I've forgotten there. Kit inspections. Was that a big thing, getting ready for kit inspections, or getting the room ready?
Usually the first time, the sergeant's never approved of it, you know, he used to come up and put the blanket away, so he wants to know what they need to start from. And they always, it's like passing your driving test, you don't pass it first time, you pass it second time, So the second thing you're going to do is you're going to review the data system and the results. So you had a kit inspection once a year, once a week, and then you had an inspection in the camp on a Sunday, usually a Sunday morning. You have to parade up Saturday morning, you have to parade with the best battle dress and each police and his police and the banquet and the other stuff, and the inspector.
Now, were you assessed at the end of the thing, or did you just all pass?
I think you might have been assessed because some were sent to an
institute. Now, who were you posted to there? Because you went there in about July, you're not sure, but about July 42. And who were you joining there?
Well, it was again another. Like an infantry unit.
Still infantry? There. You hadn't joined the Royal Armoured Corps then?
No. But then when we arrived here, they assessed us there. I don't know how they were doing it. I think the assessment was according to how many casualties. If you had big casualties at some battle, infantrymen were shooting, then you were sent to an infantry unit, you see, to the casualties. But we were sent to Catholic, who It was an armoured unit. I mean, it was all armoured men, it was tanks and cattle and that thing. And the reason that we were sent here is this regiment, quite powerful, or there was another regiment too, I think it was another name of that other regiment, but they were brought back to England after being on duty in Ireland for a couple of years. They started off with armoured cars and they finished off with Cromwells. And they were getting this list of men from America, and the Sherman tank were coming up to. So they needed more men, and that's where the military kind of we were drafted. We were taught how to, not drafted at that stage, we were taught how to.
So you were with the Royal Armoured Corps at Catterick Camp?
Yeah. Into a wireless operator. They sort of looked at you and said, right, you're very good at a wireless operator. You're a good driver, like top captain, and you're a good captain. I think a wireless operator, I wonder if I'm not, so I listened to the wireless and done the Morse code.
Well, could you go through the training a bit more? Which wireless was it that you were working on?
I really don't know.
Was it the set that you'd get in the Sherman later on?
It's a set, yeah, but it's the same as you get in the not the British type, but it's the Sherman type. And I didn't like the wireless. You were stuck in a hut all day taking Morse code and the earphones on all day, and it was
how did you take to Morse code? I mean, it sounds like not.
I could do it honestly. And I could, you know, tap it out and listen to it and pick it out, you know, and without trying to look at Brook Street or so, you know, I could write, you know, it was very good in it. But it was, to me, it wasn't, you weren't fighting, you know, you weren't, like, I wasn't in there. So, halfway through that course, I asked for a transfer to, to be a gunner operator. So you can, I knew something about wireless, but you're actually the gun. So if anything happened, you could recruit the air. It's the spare driver. The co-driver could take over the driver's position. So I became a gunner.
Now, what training did you get on the guns?
Again, it's tripping. It was a Visa machine gun we had, and then it was switched on to a Browning, because that was an American one. Browning 3.3. And we were stripping, again, stripping them out in the dark.
How did the two guns compare, the Beezer and the Browning, would you say?
I prefer the Beezer.
Why?
It's a better gun, a better firepower. The Browning was apt to have fired it, you couldn't fire it at a long burst, you take a short burst, because when the shell fired, the gases form the coating very quickly, which means you have to strip it and chip it off and put it back. And in fact, you have to change the barrels if you're using it a long time. You have to change the barrel every so often. Whereas these are, there's more solid. All you have to do is take away the carbon. It's a carbon that it formed. It didn't have to do it off. And it's a more soft, maybe it's a more solid thing.
And what about training in the bigger guns?
The 75 millimeter.
Was that what you were introduced to first?
75 millimeter.
How did this set you off on it? Did they have a Riper, I think it was called, training, a mock-up of it?
Yes, they had a classroom with this gun in the classroom so that you could get to know how to strip and clean it and work it, put in dummy shells and unload it and ship it. And told you that if the shell didn't fire, you had to stand and wait for about 5 minutes. I always remember that. Looking after yourself, you know, but then they find that I wait for 5 minutes and then clear the tank and then unload it quick, so you cast it.
We'll come back to, I think, more to that in action. Yeah. What about actual firing? You know, ranges. How to?
Went to the range and they had all started all over the range and new work and I was quite good at that.
Were you introduced to the actual tank at this stage, or was this just fixed 75 millimeters?
No, this is just fixed 75. There was no tank at that time.
So no Sherman.
No Shermans, no, they were just a new tank at the time, you know. They had the arrival of the arrival, as far as I recall. They were arriving at the time. Actually, I didn't know at the time when they were going to Sherman tank. You know, they knew we were on a lot of core and they were going to something. And I mean, the tank is on 2 pounders and various things. I'm afraid I'm not very good at that. I don't think they stuck at that. And they did show them the 2 pounders and the skill cars with the machine guns and that. It's really a big tank.
Did they give you any actual training in driving?
Well, yeah. I was taught how to drive a lorry. Atlas, Catherine Camp, the 3 tonners and the 1500 weights. We teach us how to drive these.
Could you drive before?
No, I could drive. I mean, they taught me. They taught everybody in the armor corps was taught to how to drive for the right hand. Mind it, if there was any marks given, I don't think I would have passed enough. I mean, in the army you get away from it, but I passed enough to be able to drive. I think it's necessary, and they taught me again how to drive the tank, but I wasn't very good at that, so it was cheap. And I was kind of small, I'm all the way to 8 stone, you see, and you're trying to show this, and the equipment, the clutches and what have you, and then pull the sticks back. Well, that wasn't strong enough for that, so I think they realised that if anybody's not going to be a driver, you know, because it's like, you know, you need somebody to go on.
Any other training at Catterick?
How to paint white stones and stones when a visitor came and digging holes and then refill them up again. He's stuck in my mind.
Well, tell us about what, I mean, I know what you mean, but could you tell us about what they were on about?
Well, some days, after about 3 or 4 weeks training at Catterick, they're nothing as far as to do. They kind of have 50 or 60 men hanging around doing nothing, so we used to get into big bowls. And I always remember that we had this fucking great big bowl, and we said, well, what do you do after another? And the sergeant said, well, that's fine, just for me, and it's just,
So it sounds like there wasn't much to do for you in the evening. Now, how long were you at Catterick? When did you leave? Or when did you your first posting was to the 2nd, 5th and 4th files, I think. When did you join them, roughly? So that one, they were at Chippenham between October 42 and June 43. So, any idea within that? You'd be called up in 42.
Called up in 42. Well, before the beginning of 43.
Right. Yeah. So that and they were at Chippenham. Yes. Now, what were your first? You weren't given any choice on the posting, were you?
And I teamed up with this chap McCrine, and he came from Edinburgh. He was demobilised later. Because his face was all, you know, how you get acne when you're really young. His face was terrible. Him and I were chummed up, and we went to this sergeant major. He said, can you play football? And I said, well, I can kick the ball. I'm really good at playing the football. So that was on. And McCrine, and he said, oh yeah, I can play. I would play for the boys to do. It was end of the book, so football. And me, I was just saying, oh, I don't know, it's time to turn. It was A squadron, I think.
To which squadron?
A squadron.
So you were in them right from the start?
Yeah, there were no interest in me because I didn't play football, you know. And a great football thing of it in the face at that time. In fact, most of the football players were corporals and not corporals. this, of course, was the territorial regiment. Understand, not a regular regiment, territorials, and because they all knew one another. I mean, all the officers were located in the county area, and the
and but most of the men came from the South area, whereas we were newcomers.
Now, which troop were you in A Squadron?
Fourth and the fourth troop.
So, again, right from the start.
Right from the start, yeah, I was in that all the time.
And who were you put in the tank crew straight away?
Yeah. But I don't think it was Brownlee at that time. Andy came just after me. But at the time, it was Andy's driver. I didn't know, but he got to know the driver. Was your driver was there all that time. McKinnon was the name. And then the other chap, the wireless operator, was... You know how you get these big departments from which you get these men who decorate the statues and, you know, the dummies, so to say. He was one of those in Aberdeen, he was one of those who had the department.
Would that be Doe? Trooper Doe?
Yeah.
Doe, D-O-W.
England. Norman Green. Tall, slim lad, wear glasses.
And was this you were on Sherman straight away?
Yeah. Yeah, I got the Sherman's there, and they hadn't got the crew for them. The crew was just gone, and then we got there, and Cromwell's, I don't know if it was Crusaders, but they had just gone.
Crusaders, yeah.
Crusaders, no. The Crusaders were a three-man tank, was it?
Not sure.
No, it doesn't matter anyway, but we got there, it was all Sherman's, and of course we were, everybody was being taught in Sherman's, so it wasn't as if we were, the other rest had known, the regulars had known about Sherman's, and we hadn't, and we were being, everybody had was being taught at the same time, because they, they did the length of Sherman's, so you even have a regular voice. So that in a sense was quite good, because we're all newcomers to that tank.
Now, what can you give us in as much detail as you can, what a Sherman was like to and what everybody in the crew had to do, you know, within it?
The Sherman,
what its characteristics were like?
The Sherman was Americans, they go for comfort, and they, from a gunner's point of view, we had a seat which with a back on it, and it was a soft seat, you know, a padded seat with a back, and you could lean back on it, you know, this sort of thing. And the loader or the wireless operator, he had also a seat with padded, you know, so that comfort was one sense in the Sherman was great comfort, you know. But the trouble is, and this was pointed out later, that Sherman's, you know, the boys were being in the desert, and they call them Bronson violators, because if they get hit, the metal went out of it and it set off the ammunition, which we were, you know. So the thing was, how to get out of the tank, because you've got two men in the tank and only one exit, and you have two men underneath you, and they've only got an exit, which if the gun is pointing the wrong way, they kind of get out, they've got to go out through the floor. So you had to have a wee bit the training on how to get out and during a brewed up.
And you trained in England on that?
Yeah, we had a wee bit. We didn't have a full scale, but just each tank crew had a rehearsal. It wasn't official, it was just a rehearsal for you to get out, and the officer of Burnham to get out and maybe a few of us to stay. How we go, and we all had to. And my job was to turn the gun so that the men in the front could get out their hatches with the gun at a certain point. And the operator had to come under the gun out through the hatch where the officer was sitting, and he had to go quick to let the rest of them come out. And I was more or less in the turret, I was third man out with the same amount of gun. And there was actually when we found that the seating arrangement in the tank was just too comfortable. Because the back's rest, you couldn't get out, you know, you had to struggle to get out with this back. So there's no back in that tank, you know. So that was the first thing we learned. When we got our own tank, this was only using our own tank. That was the first thing to do, was the seat, the back of the seat. So we were on the second one school. And that's when British tanks fell, when the Crusaders, and it was on a wee bunk.
Just like a stool.
Just like a basic or something, that wee stool. But the Americans, a few companies, well, these were sent, we were sent to us, you know.
So the two in the body, the two co-drivers,
yeah.
The driver and the co-driver, they, once you turn the gun round, they'd go through their hatch. What about the hatch underneath?
Well, if the gun is pointing the wrong way, you put it down. The co-driver, the hatch was just behind him, and he turned round, and there's two locks. He just put the lever, and the thing dropped on the ground. And it's a case of getting out and crawling underneath the tank. There's plenty of room, it's just
a
bit,
say,
not a bit. A catch, you need just to, you've just done that, and the class on the ground.
So
that, you have to get that as the only way they can get it. But this is the thing that, again, created a lot of the problem. You have to be very slim if you're a
straight tumble. Now, so that's. Thing. What about the actual tank itself? What about the gun? I mean, that was 75mm. Were you happy with that?
Oh, yeah, that was a great gun. Until we ended up at the war, of course, and then the South Scottish, the AP shell wasn't any great. The high velocity shell wasn't very good because it was a very strong German tank.
But that was later. At the time, you were happy with it?
We discovered one thing with the tank early on in training in England, that the high explosive shell had a delay on it, a wee screw on it, which you come to delay, and that was the loader's job, the driver's job. And you say to him, delay, and he would turn the screw on the delay, and that gave you 1 second of the shell to land, and would wait and then blew off. But we found that by firing the shell in front of the target on delay, the target's there, we would fire it there, and it would skid off the ground and go up into the air and go up until you had an air burst. And that we found very effective. I don't think the rest of the time we used that, Brownlee and I used that enough about these air bursts by firing the shell. The main in the ground was reasonably common.
And that was the HE shell or the AP shell?
That was the HE shell. The AP shell.
That was just solid, wasn't it?
That was solid. And I thought I'd get it at a time, but it wouldn't feel very comfortable inside it, but we found that we didn't depend on it. It's just as much as we did. And this high explosive shell was going to be good. In fact, we developed, later on, we developed. Went through a bridge and the road was turned right, and we didn't know what was on the right hand side. So we fired that shell on delay, and it hit the side of through the bridge, it hit the bridge, and it was veered to the right, and the explosion cut out of our side. And that was actually, you could make the shell go round corners.
Ricochet round corners. We'll come back to that, because I think we're going to come back to all of those things. They're very good at illustration of practical use. Now, what about the machine gun? That was the Browning.
Browning, yeah.
You had two, didn't you?
Well, yeah, the co-driver had one.
Yours was just linked.
Attached to the big gun.
So it pointed where it went.
And to fire it, there was two studs on the floor, and your foot, if it was a high explosive, if it was a big gun, you were firing, you used the left-hand one, and if the machine gun, you used the right-hand one. Many an error was made. But that, I don't know anyway, because your big feet, you press the wrong button, find your foot and see a shell go through, and all of a sudden, machine gun would go. Or if you had only one machine gun, as I suppose, such a big, big shell would come straight away and blow it. That happened behind the bats later on. But that was a nice problem, the buttons are too close together, and you do switch over, you see. And also have to switch over your telescope, because the telescope had to be switched over to range for machine gun or range for the big gun. And And again, that's something to build up on. In the heat of the moment, you forget to switch over.
What about the load?